Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, I'm Grant Wall. Welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. This week's interview guest is Ested Herndon, a national political reporter for the New York Times and a fan of Tottenham Hotspur. Quick reminder, if you like the podcast, it would really help us if you go to Apple Podcasts and provide a rating and a review. We'd appreciate you recommending the podcast to someone you know as well. Onward!
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our guest today is Ested Herndon. He is a terrific national political reporter for the New York Times. And for the purposes of this podcast, he is also a gigantic Tottenham Hotspur fan. He was on the New York Times podcast, The Daily, on November 20th, talking about Kamala Harris's campaign. And he is now speaking to a much smaller audience on this podcast. You can find him tweeting about politics and soccer and all sorts of other things at Ested Wesley. Ested, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And happy Thanksgiving, by the way, since this is Thanksgiving week.
Yes, thank you. To you also.
Before we get to sort of all the news with your team, Spurs, I want to start by asking, like, what's your soccer story? How did you become a Tottenham fan?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of American soccer origin stories are so random. Mm-hmm. I just, frankly, woke up early on Saturdays and wanted something to watch. I was never that into, like, the kind of typical younger, like, cartoony thingies to watch. And so I started watching soccer in Spanish. I had no idea what was being said. I do not speak Spanish. But enjoyed the sport. And, like, I played basketball and volleyball, so, like, didn't play soccer. But eventually got FIFA because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then wanted a team that was good but not great to, like, mm-hmm. make the game, like, fun. And just settled on Tottenham. And then figured out how to start finding them in real life. And so at the beginning, I was kind of, like, watching. And by beginning, I mean, like, I was late middle school, early high school, was watching some of Tottenham, some of Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And I think it was those like early Pep teams of Barcelona that like the kind of beauty of the game won me over. But then I like Tottenham, who was not playing like that, has never played like that. But that's the kind of origin story. And then it was just take off from there. I mean, by the time I was in college, I was helping start the Milwaukee Spurs Club. I have gone to White Hart Lane, have not been to the new stadium, but will plan to go sometime when work slows up. But I try to go over there. Like, I've gone there every year-ish for the last, 5 years to see some match. This year I saw Chelsea Man United.
Okay, nice. So just to give people an idea here, what's your age?
I'm 26.
Okay, you're 26. And where are you from?
I'm from outside Chicago in the suburbs.
Okay. I'm always interested demographically just in how people pick up soccer and really, you know, get into it big here in the U.S. And also how they consume it. So you travel a lot. Mm-hmm. I've seen you recently with Datelines from Iowa, from South Carolina, from Atlanta, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. How are you able to consume Tottenham and soccer?
Yeah, I think so. During the midterms, I was so much. I covered the midterms for the Times, and that was also a lot of travel last year. And I was able to keep up with kind of all soccer because it was a little more calm. Mm-hmm. I've now had to scale down into like Tottenham specific, right? So I've been much worse this season at watching all Premier League, and I just am watching Tottenham. And that usually happens because if I'm on the road, I will find a supporters club. And I've like gone to South Carolina, to Chicago, to Boston, to like wherever the kind of local bar is, and we'll just pop in and watch if I can. Sometimes I'm literally writing a story while I'm sitting there. And then other times it's just planning ahead. Like days like today, today's kind of a chill day. But if I knew something was happening today and I knew there was a Champions League match during the Champions League run last year, I would come in early, start writing, because I knew that from 3 to 5 or from 1 to 3, I was going to be like holed up on the 15th floor watching. So the thing is, like, because I tweet so much, my bosses know I'm totally not working. But if you complete your task like ahead of time, they really don't care.
For the people who follow you for your politics coverage, do you get some responses of like, what is this soccer thing that you've got going?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, that comes up more and more. But like, as I tell people, like, I think that's some of the benefit of being young. Like, I had Twitter before anyone cared about what my tweets were. And at that time, I was still tweeting about politics and soccer. Like, really nothing has changed except that, like, now thousands of people are along the way with it. And so I try not to – I really don't care that much. I mean, my thought is if you want strict political things – you can subscribe to the New York Times and follow the New York Times, and you'll see every story. and if you and I feel like, you know, you follow a person, and I feel like, particularly being young and I think being Black, I feel like there are a lot of times that younger reporters feel like they can't be themselves and they're kind of the full version of themselves. And so I feel kind of like tied to, like, you know what, like, be who you are. And I think that there's enough political thought in those tweets that I would stick around even if I was here for politics. But I do every now and then get like a, like, what is this thing going on? Because I'll go days with like not tweeting about politics like at all. I think on the run up to the Champions League final, I was like full memes, full soccer. It was like absolutely nothing to do with politics.
Are we at a stage now where you can go to most places or a lot of places in this country and watch soccer at a bar?
Oh yeah. Yeah, okay. I mean, especially the early states. So for me, the early voting states I'm in frequently. So you have Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, particularly Vegas. I'm always able to find someplace.
Okay,
maybe it's not a supporters club, but it's a, you know, pub.
Okay,
and you can go there. And there's usually some, you know, obviously in the bigger cities there's more options. Yeah. But I mean, I hung out. I watched the FA Cup last year with the Columbia, South Carolina guys, who were very nice.
Nice.
I've watched, you know, like I have, I feel like wherever I have been, it's been pretty easy to be able to find. And as you mentioned, like, that's definitely a change. And you can feel, I feel like everyone who's been around, not even that long, maybe 10 years or 8 years, can palpably feel that change.
Yeah, interesting. When I first asked you to come on this podcast, I had no idea you'd be coming on just as all hell was breaking loose at Tottenham Hotspur. What do you make of Mauricio Pochettino being fired, not just leaving, but being fired and being immediately replaced within hours by, of all people, Jose Mourinho?
You know, I went through a stage of emotions. I mean, I'm like a cult member of the Pochettino Club. Like, okay. I think that if you were around, I'm a child, but like, if you were around for even AVB, right, or Harry Redknapp, like, this, it is a world of difference. And like, I had an unlimited lease for Pochettino because last season was the best season we've had in my life, right?
Like, less than 6 months ago.
Yeah. And 100%. And so that run and the just clear growth in the team and just kind of the spursiness that he like he got rid of in a lot of senses, right? And I don't think it's fair to just count that in trophies. Like, the way we just didn't capitulate on a daily basis was new.
Yeah.
And so I loved Pochettino, but I have a group of friends, and we are in a Spurs group chat called Sissoke Bros. And I remember saying before the Champions League final, this is it. Like, this is the this is the culmination, and we're either going to win or it's going to explode. And we had a discussion about that before, but I remember being so sad on that day, not just because we lost or that we weren't sure if we were going to come back, but like, it was over. It was very clear to me that like, this was the end of an era, and what was going to come after that was going to be chaos.
That's an interesting take, because I was just in Liverpool for a story, and they were talking, Liverpool fans, about how important it was that final, that if they had lost that final after losing it the year before, that would have been just the most crushing loss for all of Liverpool.
Yeah.
But my sense kind of was that Tottenham was playing with house money, if I'm being honest, at the time.
Yeah.
But you're saying you actually predicted that this was going to go wrong if...
Let me couch that. We were playing with house money. We were a worse team than, like, Liverpool is better and always was an underdog. It was my thought that the Pochettino project had led to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened after, I don't think I should say I knew it was going to be chaos, but what would happen after that would have to be a rebuild.
Okay.
And so I didn't think that it would have to lead to his firing. Right. But I definitely thought that it wasn't going to be the kind of continuous trajectory that we had seen because that was the culmination. I mean, there was no better point for us to get to. And also there was just like squad turmoil. Right. Which obviously became obvious in the last couple months. I mean, did they need to fire him? I feel like something had to change.
Mm-hmm.
And because I kind of felt that way about the Champions League. I was kind of personally sad, but I think it was a fine decision. Like, I think it made sense in my mind. He wasn't going to leave. They would have to fire him. And I think they weren't going to get rid of all the players. So there was a kind of rock and hard place effect. And so, but I was definitely sad. I was bummed, you know, just because like what he did. And so that was the tough part.
I just wonder, I said this on our podcast yesterday, that I think people now expect Tottenham to be this good or a top four team every season and a team that can go deep in Champions League every season. And that's mainly thanks to Pochettino.
Yeah.
And that people sort of forgot what was like before him.
Yeah.
And it could go back to that.
Right? Yeah. And it's a very thin line between the kind of, you know, AVB, Redknapp, Sherwood era of 6-4, right? and kind of, and cup team, like a league cup team.
Right.
Then, you know, a consistent Champions League qualifier. And not only that, but like, you know, obviously the run last year, but a quarterfinal appearance before that, you know, like a or around 16 appearance before that, like a real out of group stage, hopefully today, right? Like contender. And so I think that if you know that, then Pochettino was always the noise about him not winning was always kind of stupid because, like, you were, you know, we weren't winning before. It was just even more embarrassing. And so I think what I like about what at this point, let me couch that, what I like about the potential of Mourinho is that it commands immediate respect from players who are talented.
Yeah.
They just weren't playing, right? And he can change the squad in ways that they have to immediately respect. And I think some of what I wanted Pochettino to do was so wrapped up in personality stuff that he just, like, wouldn't do it. You know, there's like, I'm part of the folks who think that Harry Winks needs to be dropped, who thinks that Harry Kane plays too much, who doesn't run anymore, and that's, like, a problem. Yeah. And that they're like, and so like people like Lo Celso need to be rotated in, like, way more. And so I think that Pochettino was tied to personalities, and I'm hoping that what the promise of Mourinho is an ability to really kind of, because he's the biggest winner, biggest name in the room, and he's now making more money than all of them. They would never pay Pochettino. Then I'm hoping that commands a level of respect.
What do you want to see with Christian Eriksen, Alderweireld?
Yeah,
those guys.
I think Eriksen has to go. Probably.
January.
To me, it seems where we are in January. Like, I mean, Eriksen's a valuable person particularly if he can resurge. Like, if the Dele Alli resurgence can be sustained, and that's the creative force, Christian Eriksen is a very valuable player to have in that, and as a supplement to there. Mm-hmm. And I think he's needed some competition. And if we're through to the Champions League knockout stages, I would want Christian Eriksen still there.
Okay.
So the summer is fine by me. The same kind of with Alderweireld. It's like, I think that both of them had rightly, you know, like, part of the wage structure stuff with Tottenham, like, they have rightly known that they can make more money elsewhere. I think Eriksen thought Real Madrid was just waiting for him in the way that it probably wasn't, where we know that it wasn't. But I don't blame that on them. I think that what I hope is provided to them is, like, belief now.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was there before. And so I think particularly in the Champions League, or even a resurgence in the league that, like, gets us back to the top four-ness, because the rest of the league isn't that great either. Yeah. Like, I would hope that would get some buy-in that just lets that happen in the summer. If it's toxic, get rid of him in January and let's just clean the slate.
What do you see happening the rest of this season for Spurs?
I think it's too early to tell with Mourinho. Mm-hmm. I think a win today would do a lot of morale good.
We're recording this on Tuesday, by the way.
Yes, yes, sorry. against Olympiacos today. I think that the best case scenario is fourth and a cup run somewhere. It could be Champions League or FA Cup, whenever that happens. The worst case scenario is, like, Mourinho chaos. Which I guess always looms over the mind, you know, like, could, you know, as we know in year three. But, like, as you say, he's never taken a team over midseason. Maybe the players are just revolting. Like, full chaos could be upon us. And I'm still kind of optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
I think they made changes early enough. And just the rest of the league looks so murky that, like, it doesn't seem to me. What are we in now? Like, sixth or seventh? Like, after just one win, you know? So it doesn't seem to me that fourth is out of the question. I mean, Liverpool's probably going to win the league, so.
Plus, I also see Mourinho could really do something in Champions League knockout rounds.
Yeah. I think one of the things that, like, you know, there, you know, it gives me, like, I'm also a big basketball fan. It gives me, like, the Dwayne Casey, like, Raptors vibe. Like, there's a coach that can bring you to the dance, and there's a coach you want to dance with, right? And I don't know if that's true, but then the best case of scenario with Tottenham, Mourinho is someone who can take the players from being very good to knowing how to win. And just that could just be, like, tactical stuff mid-game. And, like, Pochettino's refusal to sub to the 70th minute, like, enraged all of us, right? And so, like, the you know, like, some of that stuff I hope can be corrected.
So tell me where you were the Champions League semifinal second leg?
I was in New York. I was at Flannery's, the Tottenham bar, and I was with a couple friends. So funny, Elizabeth Warren had just released a prescription drug pricing plan, and I had left the office, and they were like, because we had agreed that we weren't going to write about it, and then it had made some new, some other outlet wrote, and they were like, no, we now need to do it, blah, blah, blah. And so I had to leave the bar for the first 15 minutes, like first 10-ish minutes of the match, and like furiously type it out on my phone. And I was like, I'm not coming back. Like, I don't know if you all realize this. Like, you can fire me. You can do what you want, but I'm not coming back to the office. Like, not happening. So I was back in Flannery's. We were down. I see the goals. You know... It's, I remember, and like, I don't, maybe I'm just, that's the thing that Pochettino instilled that just is like optimism that I've never had before about Tottenham, right? So like, even in two goals in, whole bunch of people left, I was like, oh, I believe, like, let's do this. But it wasn't like an expectation. Right. It wasn't like I thought it was going to happen.
But it was possible.
It was just that, like, I had believed in that squad, the manager, that team, like, after the Man City stuff, I'm like, something's going down. And goals go in, but I remember the real moment is when Ajax hit the post. I looked at my friend and I was like, "We're gonna score! We're gonna score!" Like, you know how like there's games when like a goalkeeper's on fire and you know you're just not gonna score,
right?
Right? Like, I was like, "We're gonna score!" It was the greatest. It was the greatest. Huh. It's been all downhill since.
Are you a fan of any other soccer teams, whether it's European clubs or clubs in the U.S. or the U.S. national teams?
I am like not fully. I like passively watch a lot of soccer elsewhere. I don't like have a committed force elsewhere. I like. I mean, like I probably care more about U.S. women's than men's.
Okay.
I've like gone to a couple U.S. men's matches. I don't know what it is. It just has never really clicked for me.
They're also in the worst stretch of the last 25 years.
Now, definitely not. But like, it just is really like never. People are like, oh, like, why aren't you like more a national team? I was like, that's just never really clicked. I've been to some MLS matches. I mean, I've been to a bunch of Chicago Fire games because I grew up outside Chicago.
Now Chicago Fire FC.
Yes, yes, yes. Big critical difference. And I like watch MLS playoffs.
Yeah.
But like definitely nowhere, no one I have an active rooting for outside Tottenham. I feel like my kind of sports emotions have been filled up. Like Tottenham, Chicago Bulls, and like I care about those teams so deeply.
Right.
I don't necessarily feel like I have a more emotional capacity to give elsewhere.
Got it.
But I do like, you know, I'm not like an elitist. Like I do watch other soccer.
So I have a question for you here. I'm curious to hear the answer. I have a prediction. Which of the Democratic presidential candidates do you think is the biggest soccer fan, or at least might have a passing interest in the sport?
My first thought is Andrew Yang.
Okay.
Because he's the most normal person. I mean, I'm not, that's not an insult to any other presidential candidate. He's just never had elected office. He doesn't like kind of behave like an elected official. He like, as someone who has interacted with them, it's very much like your substitute teacher is running for president. Yeah. And so like that would give me the vibe that he like is interested in watch soccer. Maybe I have the time to. Who else would watch?
My prediction would have been Mayor Pete.
Not a bad one. I would say yes because of age and because of like he's like you know, a tastemaker, right? Like he likes like, you know, like he like, you know, loves The Wire and like, you know, like all things he should love. And so soccer would fit very nicely into that persona. But I don't know.
He tweeted something about the U.S. Soccer Federation. I don't know if somebody told him to or at, you know, some one of his advisors.
I know he still ran his Twitter until recently.
Okay.
That he like still was very much. I was just on a bus tour with him throughout Iowa, and one of the things we were talking about was social media, and he was saying that he used to just like all the way up to like 3 or 4 months ago, used to
do his own
tweets and read his Twitter, and he's like, it's too much now. Yeah. Like that would seem to be smart. Yeah. But so if you saw that US Federation tweet and it was more than 3 months ago, it was probably him.
It was just one thing though. So I had never seen anything else. So I did meet some guys who were starting an actual pro soccer team in South Bend last week down in Miami.
I mean, he would know that, right?
Like, and they were like, well, we want to go to a meeting with Mayor Pete. And like, that makes sense, I guess. Even if he's not, but like,
I would definitely say he'd probably know the most about soccer. I don't know if he's necessarily a soccer fan, but he would know, you know, he's kind of culturally with it and younger and actually, like, obviously, like, a mayor of a town. But, like, I would imagine Booker would have to know something because of Newark, too. And, like, this, like, you know, and, like, kind of New Jersey Stadium and all that stuff. So I would guess the mayors would.
Yeah.
You know, Castro?
Yeah.
San Antonio?
Yeah.
Like, you should know something. Oh, he posted a video with him and his kid playing soccer the other day.
Okay.
So I would say the mayors.
Okay. My bad. Interesting. And this brings up a story idea that is sort of one of my white whales that I want to do someday in my career.
Yeah.
Wanted to do it with Obama. Don't think I'd do it with the current president. But I want to tutor the president of the United States for a stretch, some period of time. Doesn't need to be that long. About how to have small talk with foreign leaders about soccer.
Yeah.
Because I actually think it would be in their interest to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And Obama always seemed, not that he was anti-soccer, he just was so basketball.
Yeah.
I think like Angela Merkel, for example, 100%. Is like a huge fan of the German national teams.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a good idea?
I do think it's a good idea. I also think like, I think that sports can function. I mean, I would say just in my role, going across the country to just talk to random people, often about like asking them like personal political feelings. There's like a unique role that sports play in ice breaking that is so helpful. Like I remember when I was covering crime in Boston, one of the things I would do, like I don't care about baseball that much. And I would go read up to like what was the current Red Sox drama, because it would be so great for breaking ice. I would be like, my God, David Price can't pitch in the playoffs again. And like someone would, like we would have like a 5-minute meaningless conversation, and then I can ask them about the horrible thing that happened on their street, right? But like it was like this thing, this like role that sports plays in that kind of breakdown that was actually really great. And I think that applies at all levels of kind of culture. And so, yeah, I think it's a great idea. I mean, particularly, like, I know when I, like, friends and in my life, like, there's so much that soccer's taught me about, like, geography. Like, people will be like, oh, I'm from Italy. I'm like, okay, but, like, where? And I've been to Italy once, you know? Like, it's, like, not because of any deep knowledge. It's because, like, I have all these, like, soccer things, and I have all these stereotypes in my mind about who's from where, and, like, that's probably not helpful either, but...
Just last week, I learned that North Macedonia is a country, and that it can still qualify for the Euro next summer, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, again, like all of things soccer has taught me. I mean, before, I keep telling friends, like, I need to travel elsewhere out of Europe, but it's like also like, but should I see Tottenham again? You know, like it's like the dual force in my life consistently.
It's just too bad MLS isn't quite there yet, or really not that close, especially in Boston, that when you're up there, you couldn't have, instead of talking about David Price, said, can you believe the Revs are freezing out Lee Wynn?
Yeah, you know? It was not there, and I can tell you, in Western Mass, it was particularly not there, which is where I was spending a lot of time. It was all David Price. It was all Tom Brady. You could barely get the Celtics out there, honestly.
I also am curious about Trump and soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Because he actually has embraced soccer more than I would have expected. He was a pretty big part of the World Cup bid, which was successful. His son, Barron, apparently plays and like is an Arsenal fan. Are you as surprised as I am?
On one point, yes, because it doesn't seem to kind of like fit with his like kind of cultural message, particularly like the America-centric stuff. I think on the other hand, what Trump has shown, particularly in this White House, is an ability to like, it's like a, like if the right person contacts him, he will become a champion for a lot of things, right? It's you know, if you would have told me 5 years ago that he would like be like the big prison reform guy, it would be kind of surprising. But the right combination of people who he really cares about can deliver him a win, and he is willing to do that. I mean, this is a president that is not fully, but somewhat ideological-less, right? And the kind of guiding light is oftentimes like securing a political victory, a short-term kind of thing. And so it doesn't surprise me that people with access or money, like the Federation, has been able to like, use that to their advantage, as others have. And so I think on my kind of personality side of me, it doesn't seem think that that's a fit. But once we know the kind of way this White House has operated, like everyone has had an ability with the, if you have the right people, to get some traction. And some people have really used that to their advantage.
Interesting. I mean, I don't know if you saw about 6 weeks ago outside the White House, Trump pops up one day with the FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. And I was just like, what? What's happening there?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's probably a whole story to do about how that happened, right? We have seen a lot of people pop up in a lot of places where the question was, what is happening? And so, you know, and that's really because they're fluid and it's unstructured. And we know that from the reporting, and that provides a lot of people a lot of opportunities.
We're just wrapping up here with Ested Herndon, national political reporter for the New York Times and Tottenham fan. Prediction time. How long do you think Jose Mourinho will last at Spurs?
I'll do the 3 seasons. I'll actually like...
3.5 or 2.5?
2.5. So this will be the half, and then we'll get two. I think we'll get a cup. I think we'll get a trophy out of it.
Really?
That's my big prediction.
We'll which is more than Poch got.
Yes, we'll be worse as in the league.
Yeah,
it'll be crazy. It'll be typical Pochettino madness. We won't. I mean, typical Mourinho madness. We will not. I guess my prediction is we will not have the consistency in the league and the growth of young players. Like we won't have like what we like what we morally hung our hat on, but we'll like win a league cup.
Which would be better, a league cup or a Europa League?
League cup. The Europa League would mean that we had a year of league sadness preceding it. So just give me the League Cup. Which is kind of where I am right now, honestly. I'm like, let's just, you know, let's have the Rays one, and then we can call it a day.
And just to end things up, what else intrigues you in the soccer world right now?
I'm kind of impressed with Lampard and Chelsea.
Yeah.
Hate Chelsea so like I'm not in London, so I don't have to I feel like my anger can drift from where the London-based Tottenham fans anger drifts.
Yeah,
I hate Chelsea so much more than Arsenal. just truly, I mean, I feel like they've inflicted actual pain of the last 5 years. Yeah. The like Leicester City year, the League Cup loss, like, and they're just annoying. Where I find like Arsenal is just like noise, you know. So the fact that they're like somewhat likable right now is particularly annoying to me. What else do I find interesting? Per usual, like, can the Champions League money teams actually do something? The Juventuses, the PSGs, the Man Cities.
Yeah.
To me is often like a great point of the year. And then I think we're rebuilding up to international stuff, which is good. But yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of coaches that, I mean, where Pochettino ends up next.
Yeah.
Is really interesting to me. Like United.
Bayern.
Wherever that happens will be. I feel like I guess that depends on how real him going to United originally was. But
Real Madrid was where we thought he might go.
So yeah, I mean, I think that those are kind of the storylines I am looking for. But like honestly, it's been like I think it's kind of a fun year so far. Leicester's back, that's cool.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of interesting things, and like I think like the top to bottom interestingness of the Premier League is good this year.
Yeah.
partly because of the chaos happening at the Tottenhams and the Arsenals and the Man U's, right? So yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Cool. His name is Ested Herndon. You can find him on Twitter at Ested Wesley, A-S-T-E-A-D Wesley. Ested, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Ested Herndon, as well as producer Harry Swartout, and everyone at Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Remember, if you like the podcast, it would really help us if you go to Apple Podcasts and provide a rating and a review, and we'd appreciate you recommending the podcast to someone you know. See you next time.